from the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins. Sitting in today for Tony is our own Sarah Perry, Director of Partnerships for Family Research Council.
Welcome to Friday's edition of Washington Watch. I'm your host, Sarah Perry, sitting in for Tony Perkins. Well, did this week feel particularly long to you? It did to me. I think that's always the case coming off a holiday weekend. And for those on the Hill who are about to end their congressional recess on Monday, there's a lot on their plates, from the August Abortion Survivors Protection Act to building the border wall. In just a minute, I'll talk with Republican Congressman Chip Roy of the Texas 21st Congressional District. In my second segment, we'll talk about faith in public life. We'll address the Democratic National Committee's resolution affirming secular Americans while simultaneously criticizing Christians. And New Orleans Saint quarterback Drew Brees is being criticized for promoting focus on the families' Bring Your Bible to School Day. I'll talk to Ken Blackwell, FRC Senior Fellow for Human Rights and Constitutional Governance. At the bottom of the hour, according to a new Barna Group study, 64% of young adults with a Christian background drop out of church at some point during their 20s. Some never come back. Others return in their 30s when they start having families. But 10% of the 20-somethings who have been recently dubbed resilient disciples remain committed to church attendance and the faith, Bible study, reading, and prayer. I'll have some thoughts. And at 42 past the hour, I'll talk with Joe Kennedy, the Bremerton High School football coach in Washington State, who was suspended and then fired in 2015 for daring to kneel and pray silently for 15 to 30 seconds after each football game. I'll also talk to Mike Berry, chief of staff with First Liberty Institute, which continues to represent him as his case returns for a second time to district court. As a reminder, visit our podcast website at tonyperkins.com. You can find Tony on Twitter at tperkins or me at Sarah P. Perry. Be sure to visit our podcast website. We'll have a couple of action items, more information and resources, including a letter of support you can sign on behalf of Coach Joe Kennedy. But we'll get to that in the last block of the show. Congress returns from August recess on Monday. There's a lot on the plate, from the Abortion Survivors Protection Act to the expansion of the ever-present and often debated border wall. Joining me now is Republican Congressman Chip Roy, who represents the 21st District of Texas in San Antonio and serves on the Budget Committee, Oversight and Reform Committee, and the Veterans Affairs Committee. In addition to his work as a former federal prosecutor, Congressman Roy previously served as chief of staff to Senator Ted Cruz, staff director of Senator John Cornyn's leadership office, and senior counsel to the Senate Judiciary Committee. In Texas, he was the first assistant attorney general under Ken Paxton. Congressman Roy, welcome to Washington Watch.
Sarah, great to be on the show. Really appreciate it, and I hope you're doing well.
Thank you. Well, I know it is countdown to the opening bell on Monday, and Speaker Pelosi and the Dems in the House have blocked the attempt to bring the Abortion Survivors Protection Act to the floor for a vote more than 65 times. Now, this would not, and I want to clarify this for our listeners, this wouldn't change the status of abortion law in the United States. It merely says that if a child has survived a botched abortion, that that baby should be given essential medical care to help her survive instead of being left to die. So, Congressman, the opposition by the Dems to a bill that protects babies after they are out of the womb, which we've been told was sort of the go, no-go point for all of this, to me and to our listeners is beyond outrageous.
Well, you're absolutely right, and for anybody listening, I don't think anything really explains the failure of the current Democrat leadership in Congress more than the fact that they cannot find it within themselves to even work with us to have a vote and move forward, have a debate on a very simple idea that if you're born, that you should be given life-saving treatment. This is not complicated. This is life, yes, but this is just the basics of a humane civilization. This is common sense. Ask any child what they would do if a boy, if a baby is born and is alive, and whether you give that life-saving treatment. I am absolutely blown away that we have tried to bring that up by consent, as you said, 65 times. I was proud to be one of those who did that. Believe that we've had a discharge petition signed, and I'm one of those signatories. We will keep working on this, but let's just make sure that in 2020, in the election cycle, we remember which party believes that we should protect even that life when it is born.
So speaking of abortion, you are headed into an election year, and your Democratic opponent in the upcoming congressional election is Wendy Davis. Now, she made her name in Texas and nationally as a champion for abortion. So give us sort of a brief sense of what she did.
Well, it is fairly well known that my presumed opponent in Texas 21 ran against Governor Abbott in 2014, lost very badly, was defeated by over 20 points statewide, over 20 points in the 21st Congressional District at the time. She is a very staunch defender of the abortion industry. She was sought after and had conversations about potentially heading up Planned Parenthood. She has stood up against any kind of policies that we would put in place to limit even late-term abortions. Let's be very clear. We're not talking about trying to get the United States to the level of abortion, minimizing abortion as even those enlightened souls in Europe, where it is closer to 10 and 12 weeks in many countries versus the United States, where we can not even get agreement by our Democrat colleagues in the House or anywhere else to move it to 20 weeks. Mm-hmm. In this case, my presumed opponent believes that abortion is so sacred, as opposed to life being sacred, that late-term abortions somehow should be protected. I disagree strongly. I will shout that from the rooftops, and I believe that my values on that position and many others align with the people that I currently represent far more than Senator Wendy Davis's values do.
Okay, so let's change gears quickly, because this is another huge issue that is on everyone's sort of front of mind discussion. Let's talk about the border wall, because Dems wouldn't give Trump the necessary funds to expand the border wall through an emergency declaration. He had to take them from the Department of Defense monies to make it happen. And the courts have given him the green light to use that money to secure the border through expansion. So has this had a direct impact on your district, the 21st Congressional District?
Well, I appreciate that question. Let's take this in order really quickly. Number one, we need border infrastructure. We need border fencing. We need it quickly, immediately. Our border is being exploited by dangerous cartels who are endangering American people, endangering migrants who seek to come here. We had 900,000 people who have been apprehended since last October 1. That's not counting those who have not been apprehended. 600,000 of those have been caught and released into the United States. We have dangerous fentanyl, dangerous heroin coming into our country. It is high time that we stop it. And it is very simple to stop, frankly. Do our job. Secure the border. Build the walls and the fencing and the roads and the infrastructure necessary for Border Patrol to move along the river. Democrats have failed to even acknowledge a crisis for the first half of this year. And then suddenly they wanted to start screaming crisis for the very work they refuse to do.
Right.
That is something that is completely out of line with the American people, completely out of line with Texas, And now the president is doing what he can to move dollars around under the emergency situation that we currently face at our border because Democrats refuse to do their constitutional duty to defend the United States of America. The president is doing his duty as the chief executive, Article II, commander-in-chief, to find a way to defend the United States. Now, let me be clear. I do not believe that presidents should have unfettered authority to do that for a prolonged period of time. I introduced legislation along with my good friend Mike Lee in the Senate. I introduced the House version that would limit the use of emergency funding beyond 1 year going forward because I think that Congress should speak. But I think the president is right to be doing it right now. I think Congress should speak, and I think we need to elect people next year who actually believe in border security. But the 21st District is not being directly impacted by these funds that the president is moving around. We have no facilities within District 21. We do have one dining hall in Camp Bullis, which is adjacent to the 21st District with a little piece of it in the 21st District. But the dining hall is in the 23rd District. That's about $18.5 million. I've been in touch with them. We believe we can fund this in the future years through the current appropriations the president has asked for and that it will get built. Readiness for our soldiers, our men and women in uniform will be impacted at all. And any suggestions otherwise by my opponent or otherwise are completely out of line.
So we also see another big issue, the national debt. We understand that we are cannibalizing our children's and our grandchildren's future with a problem that continues to grow. And we're looking at $4.7 trillion in the minute here that we have left. What's the stalwart sort of hang up with the national debt? Why is Washington not compelled to do something to address this crisis?
Because Congress has never meant anything that they're not willing to fund in order to empower themselves politically rather than do their jobs. And that is a bipartisan criticism. We have $22 trillion of debt. We are racking up $100 million an hour. Let me say that again. $100 million an hour we are racking up in debt. It is an extraordinary number. To put it in perspective, when Ronald Reagan gave his Time for Choosing speech in 1964, he lamented $17 million a year of annual deficit spending. That's $140 million in today's dollars. I'm talking about $100 million an hour. We have an insatiable spending problem in Washington, D.C. Congress needs to do its job. I was proud to vote no on the budget cap increases, and I'll continue to fight for fiscal sanity. Thank you, Sarah.
Thank you so much, Representative Chip Roy from Texas 21st Congressional District. You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Sarah Perry, sitting in for Tony Perkins today. Coming up next, some stories about faith and public life. I'll talk to Ken Blackwell, FRC's Senior Fellow for Human Rights and Constitutional Governance, on the DNC, Drew Brees, and the outrage mob. Coming up next.
In states like New York, Virginia, and Vermont, radical legislation has been written legalizing abortion late in pregnancy, when babies can feel pain and are able to live outside the womb.
Happy birthday to you.
They've gone even further, repealing protections of infants born alive, allowing killing even after birth.
Happy
Congress has yet to protect the life of every newborn baby. Visit endbirthdayabortion.com to send Nancy Pelosi a newborn hat to show Congress every new life should be welcomed with warmth and love, not hate, not death. End birthday abortions. Visit endbirthdayabortion.com.
Happy birthday to you.
Paid for by Family Research Council.
Are you concerned with the state of our nation? Do you want to protect and promote religious freedom, the sanctity of life, free speech, and our children's educations? Today we see a growing threat against our values on the news, on our college campuses, in our elementary schools, at our public libraries, and in our courts. Every year in Washington, D.C., thousands of conservatives attend FRC Action's Values Voters Summit. From October 11th to the 13th, come to our nation's capital to mingle with and hear from key conservatives who are bringing real change to Washington, D.C., and learn how you can too. FRC President Tony Perkins will be there, along with Ali Stuckey, Bill Bennett, Dana Lash, Oliver North, and U.S. House and Senate leaders. The 2020 elections are right around the corner, so this is one weekend you won't want to miss. We provide free scholarships for students. Register online at valuesvotersummit.org or call 1-877-372-2808. That's 1-877-372-2808.
Are you looking for timely and honest coverage of the latest news? Do you find it difficult to sort out what is true and what is false from the media? Family Research Council is here to help. FRC President Tony Perkins' daily Washington Update email newsletter addresses the most important current events affecting religious freedom, the protection of life, marriage and family, and more, not only in Washington, but around the world. The Washington Update's daily articles cover a range of topics, from underreported stories about transgender activists' efforts to infiltrate our schools to updates on court cases fighting for religious freedom, parental rights, and the protection of life. Don't miss this critical, in-depth analysis of the day's most essential stories that are shaping our nation's future. Learn more and subscribe by visiting frc.org/update. Again, that's frc.org/update.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Sarah Perry in for Tony Perkins on this Friday edition. Well, 81% roughly of white evangelicals voted for Donald Trump in the 2016 presidential election. So Democrats, it seems, are courting the votes now of atheists and agnostics. And actually, in August, passed a resolution praising the religiously unaffiliated, saying that their values align with those of the Democratic Party. In fact, they went on to criticize Christians. I'm quoting from the resolution, quote, "Those most loudly claiming that morals, values, and patriotism must be defined by their particular religious views have often used those views with misplaced claims of religious liberty to justify public policy that has threatened the civil rights and liberties of many Americans, including but not limited to LGBT community, women, ethnic, religious, non-religious minorities, et cetera, ad nauseum. Cue the outrage mob." So joining me now with his analysis is Ken Blackwell, FRC's Senior Fellow for Human Rights and Constitutional Governance. Ken, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Sarah, it's good to be with you.
So this at first blush seems like a real boneheaded move on the part of the Democrats, because what they're doing is alienating an entire segment of the voting populace. And if there are any moderates who don't align traditionally and always with the Republican Party, it would appear to me that they are locking these people out of a vote. So what's the thinking here on the Democrats' part?
Well, this is a vicious and mindless attack on the U.S. Constitution, religious liberty, the life ethic, and the Second Amendment. Look, at the end of the day, this is a boneheaded move. I like our numbers, and we just have to stay to our game plan, and that is that it does us no good to do three cheers for 2016. This is about 2020, right. And so we have to get our numbers. We have to get our numbers to the poll. We have to talk about direct action, whether it's picketing or abortion mills. We have to talk about, you know, petitioning legislative bodies, city councils, town halls, state legislatures, the Congress. We have to, in fact, keep our battle going in the courts. But more, as important, is that we have a fourth level of action, and that is person to person, family member to family member, friend to friend, neighbor to neighbor. That is what has worked for us when we're at the top of our game. Look, the left is waging war on the Constitution in general, and we, in fact, we benefit, as you and I have talked about before, when we put a harness on the power and reach of government, and we elevate religious liberty and individual freedom. That's what has made us, you know, the most prosperous, the most powerful nation in all of human history.
All right, let me switch gears real quick, because we're talking about really sort of fringe beliefs and the inability to hold anything other than far left orthodoxy. So let's talk about Drew Brees. Drew Brees, committed believer, plays quarterback, 12-time Pro Bowler for the New Orleans Saints. He comes out and does a supportive piece for Focus on the Family's initiative, Bring Your Bible to School Day. And of course, wouldn't you know it, he is screamed at by the social media mob for affiliating with a hate group, and one of the magazines starts the hashtag Saints Don't Hate, which is really too bad, because what Drew Brees talked about was sharing God's love. Hate was not a part of the equation, but this is the continuing guilt by association that the left loves to sling at individuals who hold divergent perspectives. So talk to me about how someone like a Drew Brees, who's in such a visible position and does such a good thing, responds to all of the public pressure. This is someone you would think would be sort of immune to this. How does an individual like this respond to these claims of hate from the left? Because we're seeing this more and more, and I think you and I both believe it'll only ramp up heading into 2020's election.
As I've said to you and Tony before, dogs don't bark at parked cars.
I love that.
You know, the fact of the matter is that Brother Brees actually understands that, you know, that God's word, the foundation of our nation's principled existence, is found in God's word. This is just another example of the left and the Democratic Party rejecting God and trying to remove God from the public square. It hasn't worked. It will not work because we, in fact, will stand our ground. You know, this is a message to Drew. Stand your ground, be of good courage, and act on that courage to advance God's word. He is not only a warrior on the football field, but he is, in fact, a true fighter for Christ. And he will remain strong and courageous, just like all of our listeners who are listening to us today. This is a battle where folks are not going to scare us off of the biblical truth and the right path.
I fully agree. Drew Brees actually cited 2 Corinthians 5:7, one of my favorite verses, that states we live by faith and not by sight. And boy, if we take our eyesight here lately, there is lots of ugly stuff going around. A reminder to all of us to stand firm. Ken Blackwell, FRC Senior Fellow for Constitutional Governance, has been my guest. You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Sarah Perry, sitting in for Tony Perkins. Coming up next, we'll talk a Barna study just released indicating that 64% of adults with a Christian background drop out of church at some point during their 20s. But there are some resilient disciples I want to talk about as well. We'll be right back on Washington Watch.
Did you know that Planned Parenthood was using taxpayer dollars to perform abortions? Recently, the Trump administration made changes to a healthcare policy called Title 10. The changes to this policy now eliminate the loopholes organizations like Planned Parenthood were using to receive taxpayer funding for abortions. Planned Parenthood was hiding behind terms like reproductive health care and services like cancer screenings and contraception distribution, while in reality, they were making money off of abortions. This shift in funding will benefit community health centers that provide needy families with family planning resources and health services, regardless of their ability to pay. It will also benefit pregnancy resource centers that provide care and free resources to women who may be experiencing an unplanned pregnancy. This policy decision is the right move to help and protect American lives. To learn more, visit frc.org/Title 10. That's frc.org/Title 10.
Hi, my name is Bailey. I am serving as an intern at Family Research Council, and it has been a life-changing experience. Interns join FRC's team of experts as they embark upon the mission of advancing faith, family, and freedom in public policy and the culture from a biblical worldview. The FRC internship is a 12 to 15 week program designed to educate and inspire university students who are passionate about public service and who believe that a biblical worldview is fundamental to the reformation of government and culture. As interns, we receive the opportunity to work alongside and be personally and professionally developed by FRC's team of experts. This paid internship offers free housing in the heart of DC, which allows us to be fully immersed in the fast-paced political climate and to build a community with other faithful conservatives in our nation's capital. For more information and to apply, visit frc.org/internships. That's frc.org/internships.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Sarah Perry, sitting in for Tony Perkins on this Friday afternoon. A reminder, go to TonyPerkins.com. We'll have more information for today, including a link to today's study and a link out to a letter that you can sign in support of the D-Block guest coming up after this. Well, according to the Barna Group, 64% of young adults with a Christian background drop out of church at some point during their 20s. That's up from 2011, where it was 59%. So it appears that young people are going to church in lower and lower numbers. These individuals who were raised in church, raised in Christian households, some never come back. Others return in their 30s when they start having families. But 10% of the 20-somethings that were surveyed by the Barna Group have been called resilient disciples, and they remain committed to church attendance, Bible reading, and prayer. Barna President David Kinneman's new book is called Faith for Exiles, Five Ways for a New Generation to Follow Jesus and Digital Babylon. And don't you sometimes feel like a resident of Babylon? Different, set apart of this, in this world, but not of this world, as we are called to be. Kinneman, when he wrote the book, said from a numbers point of view, 10% of young Christians amounts to just under 4 million 18 to 29-year-olds in the U.S. who follow Jesus and are resiliently faithful in spite of the tensions they feel between church and everyday life. They keep showing up, end quote. And aren't there a multitude of tensions in everyday life? We have no shortage of issues here we cover on Washington Watch that indicate the conflict between the eternal and the temporal, between the inerrant and the errant, between what is true and what is clearly false. So what's it mean to be a resilient disciple? As defined in Kinneman's book, these are individuals who've made a commitment to Jesus. So they are pre-existing Christians. They believe Jesus was crucified, raised to conquer sin and death. They are involved in a faith community beyond attendance at worship services. That means something beyond Sunday worship, and they strongly affirm that the Bible is inspired by God and contains truth about the world. These resilient disciples also agree with one or more of the following statements that speak to the hostile conditions in which their faith still thrives. And perhaps you'll hear yourself in one of these. I want to find a way to follow Jesus that connects with the world I live in. God is more at work outside the church than inside, and I want to be a part of that. Or I want to be a Christian without separating myself from the world around me. So Kinnaman, in his book, asks, what can we learn from these resilient disciples? We want to know what makes them tick, what practices distinguish them from the norm, which is the 64% of those churched individuals who are young in the 18 to 29 age range. What separates them from the individuals who leave the church, who become disenfranchised with what may appear too hard or too inaccessible or too much at conflict with the world around them? And this I say, even though the book of John reminds us that in this world we will have trouble, but he has overcome the world. Kinnaman has said that these resilient disciples highly prioritize their life of faith inside and outside their place of worship. Something beyond, again, just Sunday morning, something beyond a community of believers, perhaps during a Bible study. This is a priority in all aspects of their life. It is fully infused in all that they believe, say, and do. And as the parent of three kids, this is something that we are trying to transmit to our own kids, that this is not something separate from who you are, but goes to the very essence of who you are. And that question that Mary Eberstadt and I discussed in yesterday's D Block on Washington Watch, who am I? That most critical question can be answered in one place and one place alone, and that's who we are in Christ. So these young brothers and sisters, they are young adults who model the outcomes hoped for by the rest of us in the body of Christ. And let me say specifically, as parents, because I have one who is just a hair younger than this age range, it is my prayer for him that he would be a resilient disciple. By getting to know these resilient disciples, we can find out what formative experiences and relationships are most effective for growing a resilient faith in exile. Because isn't that what we are? We are exiles from an eternal kingdom for a period of time in an environment that will be, the Bible promises us, hostile to our beliefs because of what we profess and who we follow. But he has overcome the world. Coming up next, I'll talk with a gutsy football coach at Bremerton High School who was fired for one thing, kneeling to pray quietly after a football game. I'll also talk with Mike Berry, chief of staff with First Liberty Institute, that continues to represent him as his case returns for a second time to district court. We'll be right back.
We live in a time of great political division, and this division only intensifies during campaign season. The toxic tone in politics can be discouraging, which makes it a very real temptation for many Christians to wipe their hands of politics altogether. After all, if God is sovereign and controls the heart of the king, as Proverbs says, do we really need to get involved in the messy world of politics? Because political engagement can be divisive, shouldn't Christians abandon politics and direct their energies toward more spiritual pursuits? Christians are called to submit every area of their life to God, which includes how they engage in politics. But they are called to engage biblically. This requires Christians to be prepared to follow their political theology to its logical end and vote for candidates and parties that support clear biblical values. For more information on the Christians' call to engage in politics, visit frc.org/engage. That's frc.org/engage.
radical abortion laws in New York, Illinois, and Vermont are challenging the sanctity of life. These laws have lifted the few existing restrictions on abortion in the name of family planning and mental health of pregnant mothers. Americans need to take a stand and defend the rights of the unborn. Family Research Council is sending Congress 90,000 baby hats as a reminder that babies should be welcomed with love and warmth, not potential danger. Supporters have already funded over 45,000 hats. We are over halfway there. Join Americans across the nation and donate $9 to send a powerful reminder that young lives need to be cherished. When you take action, we'll send you an end birthday abortion certificate that will remind you to pray for born alive babies who are facing the danger of being killed outside the womb. Visit endbirthdayabortion.com for more information. That's endbirthdayabortion.com.
Hello, this is Tony Perkins, President of the Family Research Council here in Washington, D.C., and I would like to invite you to join my wife, Luana, and I, along with Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin and former Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann, for FRC's Israel Tour, June the 2nd through the 12th, 2020. Whether you're sailing on the Sea of Galilee, standing in the ruins of Capernaum, or journeying up to Jerusalem, Israel is unlike any other place on earth. You'll relive the final earthly days of Jesus as you pray in the Garden of Gethsemane. You look upon Golgotha and stand in the garden tomb. The reality of his story will come alive in a transformative way. This one-of-a-kind tour will not only allow you to explore the land of the Bible and the roots of our Christian faith, you'll also hear firsthand from some of Israel's political, defense, and religious leaders. Join us June the 2nd through June the 12th for this life-changing experience. For more information, visit TonyPerkins.com or call 844-872-5155.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Sarah Perry, Director of Partnerships here, sitting in for Tony Perkins on your Friday afternoon. Well, thankfully, football season is back in full swing, and with apologies to my listening audience, I am a Packer fan, but my son is a diehard Seahawks fan. And so for the avid football fans among us, that 6 month span between February and July is what we call mourning period in our house. But I want to tell you the story of someone who doesn't always get to celebrate when the football season begins. We started our last segment by talking about resilience disciples. And my next guest is that embodiment in full. Just across from the Puget Sound from Seattle, in the heart of Seahawks country, former Bremerton High School football coach Joe Kennedy is entering his fourth year without football. In 2015, Kennedy was suspended and eventually fired as a coach because he took a few seconds after each game to kneel silently and pray on the sidelines. Those are First Liberty Institute Chief of Staff's Mike Berry's comments and his summation. His column recently went up in the Washington Examiner, and he is representing Coach Joe Kennedy as this case heads back to district court. Joining me now is not only Mike Berry, but also Coach Kennedy himself. Mike and Coach Kennedy, welcome to Washington Watch.
Oh, thank you for having us.
So, Coach, I want to start with you. It is absolutely untenable to believe that you were fired for an act that seems so simplistic, so harmless, so benign, and indeed so helpful that it should be any coach's right. And for anyone looking at this from an outside perspective, whether or not you are a lawyer, I'm sure there were frequent screams of violation of the separation between church and state we hear so often about. But here you are, kneeling quietly and silently after the game to offer a few seconds of prayer. Were you as shocked then as you are today that this has gone on as long as it has?
Oh, absolutely. I can't believe, I'm absolutely lost for words that today, you know, the Constitution, which, you know, I fought and defend, it doesn't apply anymore today. So I'm just amazed the way that the courts looked at this whole situation and to remove people's constitutional rights because of whatever reason they think is necessary. I'm at loss for words.
So talk to me about how you expressed your faith among your players, because after a while, I'm sure the questions came, Coach, what are you doing after the game? And I'm sure there were students who were very curious and wanted to know sort of where you were coming from. And what an incredible opportunity to talk to these individuals. And I was just talking in the last segment about how this particular segment, right, this 18-plus group is so quickly leaving the faith that this presented you with a really tremendous opportunity. How did you interact with your players on where you stood theologically?
Well, that was an interesting thing because I started out just taking a knee all by myself out on the 50 after every football game. And then after, maybe a month or two, some of the kids noticed me taking a knee out there after the game, and they said, Coach, what are you doing out there? And I said, just giving it, a shout out to God for what you guys just did. And a couple of the players said, we're Christians. Do you mind if I join you? And of course I said, it's a free country. This is America. You can do whatever you want. So they started coming out, and then they started inviting more of the team. And before you knew it, we had, the whole entire team out there. And then we had, they started inviting some of the other team, our opposing team. So it was just amazing to see how much, the team actually was just open to the way that, my faith and my beliefs, especially for me, giving thanks for what they did.
And you know what's so interesting to me is that this voluntary participation on the part of the students, your voluntary prayer, not coercing any of them into forcing to kneel with you to pray after the game, has somehow hit the microaggression outrage mob tripwire. So at this point, you're approached by school administrators, and what are they telling you about these prayers after the game?
Originally, they just wanted to know what was going on. There is a policy that the school has that employees of the school district cannot encourage nor discourage kids in prayer. And I was perfectly fine with that because I didn't care if they came out or not. That was up to them. So they wanted to make sure that I was actually in compliance with what the school said. And then their lawyer got involved, who represents the entire state of Washington. And he said, oh, no, we can't have that. So they start this big investigation, and they said, yeah, this could be potentially, a breach of the Constitution and Establishment Clause. So you cannot pray anymore. Well, actually, they said not to pray with the students anymore. And I said, well, that's fine. I don't have to pray with the kids anymore. It's unfortunate, but, your school, your rules. And so I went back to just praying by myself. And then that wasn't good enough, and they kept changing it that you can't do it if anybody can see you. So that's what it actually came down to. I was all alone on the 50, and, because people could still see me doing it, somehow that was against the Establishment Clause.
So I have to say this for our listeners. You really fit the prototypical American hero model. Let me give you a little background to our listeners on Coach Kennedy. You are a retired Marine Corps gunnery sergeant. You did a combat tour during Operation Desert Storm. You coached for intangible values of leadership, character, fidelity. You set a great example for your players. A lot of these young men came from broken homes, and I'm sure to them, you were a father figure. So your absence is a particularly large wound, I believe, to the students and athletes at Bremerton High School there in Washington. Have you heard from students, from players at the school, from teachers, administrators, since this decision was rendered in 2015 firing you?
Oh, absolutely. I still attend every single game that, you know, Bremerton has. Matter of fact, tonight is their opening football game. And so I'm actually waiting to go to the game tonight. And I stay in touch with, you know, tons of my players. I'm still friends with a bunch of the people at the school. I go to their weddings. I go to their graduations. I go to the birth of their children. And so, yeah, very much involved with their lives. And, you know, they made a huge impact on me. So, it's such a blessing to actually have them invited me to go to their weddings and, you know, to see them raising their own families now.
Okay, so let's shift gears and talk a little bit about the legal wrangling in this situation and where we are procedurally, because this is sort of the second go-around here. So, Mike, I want to ask you a couple questions. 3 years ago, and it was this month, First Liberty Institute, where your chief of staff, filed a suit against Bremerton High School, against the school district, on behalf of Coach Kennedy, seeking only for his reinstatement as a coach. So you weren't asking for financial damages. You weren't asking for any associated compensation. What happened with that original lawsuit?
Well, the original lawsuit ended up, just as you said, we only asked for a coach to be reinstated. We did that through a legal procedure called a preliminary injunction. The court denied that preliminary injunction, so we appealed that to the Ninth Circuit, the infamous Ninth Circuit.
Yeah.
They also ruled against us, and we took Coach's case to the U.S. Supreme Court. The U.S. Supreme Court only takes about 1% of all cases that are brought to it, so your odds are never that great. But we felt that Coach had a really good shot at getting his case reviewed just because of how outrageous the fact pattern is. The court, unfortunately, denied review, but in an extremely rare move, I mean, something that you may only see once or twice in a career, they issued a statement respecting the denial, saying, look, we're not ready to take this case right now because we still need more facts developed at the court, you know, down in the lower courts. So if you guys go back, I'm paraphrasing, but basically if you guys go back down to the trial court, answer some of these questions and get some of these facts, you know, set up, and then come back to us, we might be willing to rehear the case. And oh, by the way, you know, this is what the court also said. Oh, by the way, we also recognize that you guys only brought Coach's case up on a free speech claim. You didn't bring the case up on free exercise. Now, you know, constitutional lawyers will probably know why, but the court said, yeah, we also know why. The reason why you only brought a free speech claim and not a free exercise claim is because there's a really, really bad Supreme Court case from about 30-plus years ago called Employment Division versus Smith. And that case for the last, you know, 3-plus decades has been used to really it's really gutted free exercise claims. And they said, you know, basically – we haven't been asked to revisit that case yet, you know?
So yeah.
It was clearly sending a strong signal. And it sent shockwaves through the legal community. Constitutional lawyers and commentators and pundits alike were all just really in awe of the Supreme Court statement, sort of inviting people to possibly challenge Employment Division versus Smith, this Supreme Court case. It's been on the books for, like I said, more than 3 decades. So we're back down at the trial court. We are going to do exactly as the Supreme Court suggested, answer those questions to the best we can, and hopefully we'll have a second shot to get back up there. I mean, obviously, we'd like to win before we have to go to the Supreme Court. If the district court wants to rule in Coach's favor and get him back on the sidelines, then absolutely, we're happy for that. But if we have to take this all the way back to the Supreme Court again, then we're willing to do so.
So the Ninth Circuit, understanding that it is the Nutty Ninth for a reason, is it is notorious for exercising, and I'm going to say perceived hostility to religious liberty, because I'm sure, you know, other scholars, legal scholars, would argue with me that there's a perfectly rational legal argument to be made. But their initial ruling said that there was no First Amendment protection for his praying on the sidelines. So if you go back and if you are in a position to bring up a challenge under Employment Division versus Smith. Are you hopeful, based on where the Ninth Circuit has ruled previously on a nearly identical challenge, separate but related, that you are going to get the outcome that you want?
Well, we're certainly hopeful, you know, and I would even say that we are cautiously optimistic. But you know, nothing is ever a guarantee in the practice of law, because, you know, you're obviously dealing with complex facts and circumstances. And, you know, there's talented and smart attorneys on the other side. But, yeah, it really, what this case boils down to, the real question for, you know, courts at every step of the way, whether it's a district court, the Ninth Circuit, or the U.S. Supreme Court, is whether or not American citizens, just like Coach Kennedy, right, the tens of thousands of public school teachers and football coaches around the country, whether or not they are going to be protected by the First Amendment if they do something as simple as, if you are a Jewish school teacher and you wear a yarmulke, if you are a Muslim school teacher and you wear a head covering, if you're a Catholic school teacher and you cross yourself before you eat a meal and you say grace, whether or not you have protection under the First Amendment from being fired for those things. And under the current state of the law in the Ninth Circuit, the answer to that is no. You are not protected if your school fires you because you do anything that is religious that other people can see. And that's just, I mean, there's no other way to describe that than an outrage that's just completely antithetical to our Constitution. And so, again, what that brings me back to is that First Liberty Institute, we're doing everything in our power to reverse that.
It is a terrifyingly broad ruling as it currently stands, which leads us here to believe that this is a case truly all Christians should be concerned about. And there have been a wealth of these cases that have hinged on claims of free exercise and have hinged on related claims that are similar. But this one, so broad in scope, really bears an impact for all of us and ought to be something about which we are concerned. So here you are, you're prepping for the next round of the battle. What do you want our listeners to know as we close out today?
Well, the most important thing for listeners to know and really to do is to pray for Coach and pray for our legal team as we defend him. Stay involved, stay alert, you know, or stay informed. Because Coach, you know, it is about Coach, obviously, in his case, but it's about so much more than that, right? There are, like I said, there are tens of thousands of employees and coaches around the country this could affect. And so we need to know what our rights are, because the fastest way for us to lose our rights is if we don't stand up for them. But how can we stand up for them if we don't know what they are?
Mike Berry, Chief of Staff for First Liberty Institute, and Coach Joe Kennedy have been my guests today. You've been listening to Washington Watch. Go to TonyPerkins.com and sign the letter of support for Coach Kennedy. We'll be back next time.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.